This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Friday, June 22nd, 2018. Coming up this hour,
oil gains as OPEC meets in Austria. We'll bring you the latest from Vienna.
Global stocks rise as investors await more developments on trade.
Greek bonds rally after the country strikes a landmark debt deal.
Voters in Turkey head to the polls. We'll have details from Istanbul.
A vote on a House immigration bill has been delayed as a GOP intra-party fight continues, plus a surprise visit by the First Lady to an immigration detention center. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Coming up in sports, Yankees edge the Mariners thanks to Aaron Judge touching them all, and the Knicks go Kentucky in the draft.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 991 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
U.S. futures and European equities are rising along with oil this morning. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 13 points, Dow futures up 115, NASDAQ futures up 27. The DAX in Germany is up a third of a percent. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 2.91%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.55%. NYMEX crude oil up 1% or 68 cents to $66.22 a barrel. COMEX gold is up a tenth of a percent, up $1.30 to $12.71.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1666, the yen, 110.14. And this data check brought to you by Greenwich Shares, a provider of cost-effective no-K1 commodity ETFs. Visit GreenwichShares.com for more information. Distributor Foreside Fund Services, LLC. Bob.
As OPEC and its allies meet in Vienna, a deal to increase oil output is coming into focus. Producers have reached a preliminary agreement to boost production by 1 million barrels a day. Still, there's strong opposition from Iran. Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern brings us the latest from Vienna.
It's going to be a very difficult meeting. Yesterday when we were here, the Iranian oil minister left within 15, 20 minutes of the JMMC kicking off. He has said that he does not think they can reach an agreement today. As the ministers came outside, I caught up with Khaled Al-Faleh briefly. He was explaining to me this 1 million barrels per day, this nominal figure that they're going to put on paper, actually means for the market 600,000 barrels. What we want to know today is, can there be consensus? Will Iran, as well as possibly Venezuela, sign up for this deal or not?
Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern reporting from Vienna. Thank you, Anne-Marie. And oil is trading higher this morning. Brent crude in London up 1.1% at $73.92 a barrel. And in New York, WTI up 1% at $66.22.
Turning to trade now, today the European Union joins a host of nations implementing retaliatory tariffs against the U.S. Bloomberg's Rich Bravo reports from Luxembourg.
The EU duties on 2.8 billion euros of U.S. products will hit U.S. consumer, agricultural, and steel products in many key Republican constituencies, putting pressure on Trump ahead of crucial midterm elections in November. Washington is undeterred, with U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross telling Bloomberg that nations hit with U.S. tariffs have, quote, been spoiled for many, many years, and that game is over. In Luxembourg, Rich Bravo, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Meantime, the White House appears split over President Trump's hardline stance on trade. Sources tell Bloomberg some White House officials are trying to restart talks with China to avoid a trade war before U.S. tariffs take effect July 6th.
In Greece, the country's euro area creditors have struck a landmark deal to ease repayment terms on some of the nation's debt. The move clears the way for Greece to exit the lifeline that's kept it afloat since 2010. That has Greek bonds trading higher this morning.
And when it comes to Italy, Christine Lagarde is putting focus on the country's fiscal plans. The International Monetary Fund's managing director warns that financial markets could react violently to any spending plans that would increase debt. Bloomberg market strategist Mark Cranfield has more.
The timing of the reminder from Madame Lagarde seems to be quite significant, because it was also announced in the last few hours that Greece has finally got a long-term package to help it out of its debt situation. So it's probably a warning to Italy that if you don't toe the line, it could take you a very long time to come to negotiations on any debt relief that you may need.
Stocks and bonds in Italy slid yesterday following the appointment of two Eurosceptics to posts in the nation's parliament. This morning, they're recovering some of those losses.
Meanwhile, economic momentum in the euro area unexpectedly picked up in June. A composite purchasing managers index climbed to 54.8 this month. The increase was driven by a jump in services growth, while a slowdown in manufacturing persists.
Investors are bracing for a big move in the Turkish lira next week. As voters in Turkey head to the polls on Sunday, Bloomberg's Simon Demirkan reports from Istanbul.
Voters in Turkey will be choosing a president and selecting a parliament. If no presidential candidate gets above 50%, it goes to a second round 2 weeks later. The opposition has made its strongest showing since President Erdogan came to power in 2003, and it looks like it's going to be too close to call. In Istanbul, Simin Demirkan, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Simon, thank you. Here in the U.S., big banks have cleared the first hurdle in this year's stress test. We get more from Bloomberg's Charlie Pillard.
The Federal Reserve found all 35 lenders examined could withstand a severe economic downturn, though Goldman Sachs Group trailed the rest of Wall Street in a key measure of leverage. The results mark the third straight year that every bank exceeded the Fed's minimum capital demands. The exams assess how much capital lenders would have left after enduring financial shocks. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Charlie. Morgan Stanley joined Goldman Sachs in trailing its peers when it comes to capital levels. That would presumably limit how much cash the firms could return to shareholders. But both Goldman and Morgan Stanley say they may be able to buy back more shares than yesterday's figures suggest.
Deutsche Bank has had the outlook for its credit rating cut. Fitch Ratings lowered the firm's rating from stable to negative, citing risks tied to Deutsche Bank's turnaround plan.
While Disney is promising more asset sales to gain antitrust approval for its Fox deal, Disney says it's prepared to sell off businesses generating as much as $1 billion in cash. That's twice the amount it initially offered to divest as part of its bid to buy the entertainment assets of 21st Century Fox.
Airbus threatening to pull its UK investments if Britain walks away from the European Union without a deal. The aerospace company says a departure from the single market and customs union without a transition agreement would lead to, quote, severe disruption and interruption of UK production. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. That brings us to 5:07 on Wall Street's immigration turmoil. The latest from Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Bob. The House of Representatives is delaying a vote on immigration reform until next week. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The disagreements are within the Republican Party, not having the votes to get it passed. House Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadow says they aren't ready to go in.
We're having a discussion about E-Verify and Ag Jobs, two more very important issues that we have yet to discuss so far. So we're going to spend the weekend delay a vote till next week and see if we can come to a compromise on those two final issues.
A more hardline bill was voted down yesterday. Meanwhile, the process of reuniting children and parents at the border has begun. In many cases, the authorities don't even have names, and many of the small ones can't communicate theirs. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
First Lady Melania Trump made an unannounced visit to a detention center in the border town of McAllen, Texas yesterday. The facility housed immigrant children.
I'm here to learn about your facility, and which I know you housed children on a long-term basis.
Meanwhile, a spokeswoman for Mrs. Trump says there was no hidden message on a jacket worn by the First Lady. Mrs. Trump wore a jacket that sells for $39 at Zara that read, "I really don't care, do you?" The incident seemed forgettable until her husband, President Trump, sent out a tweet that said the message refers to the fake news media. A federal judge has ruled former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort will be kept away from other prisoners while he's in a Virginia jail. Manafort's bail was revoked on June 15th after prosecutors accused him of obstructing justice by contacting witnesses ahead of his trial. UK Chancellor Philip Hammond says he's not the enemy of Brexit. Bloomberg's Alex Morales in London reports Hammond slammed EU proposals for cross-border financial services after Britain leaves the bloc.
At his annual Mansion House speech to an audience of bankers, Hammond spoke of the importance of forging a new relationship that protects existing trade and business relationships built up over decades. He said that EU proposals for a so-called enhanced equivalence system to govern the financial services relationship between Britain and the bloc after Brexit aren't credible, and instead advocated a system whereby Britain and the EU can set different rules on financial services so long as the outcomes are broadly the same. In London, Alex Morales, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. Now 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And good morning to you, Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Bob. The Yankees edged one of the top AL contenders, the Mariners, 4-3 at the stadium, courtesy of Aaron Judge, who belted his 19th home run, which turned out to be the game winner, as New York won their 50th game of the year.
Yeah, this is a good Seattle team they got. You know, good offense, good pitching staff, great bullpen. You know, for us to, you know, get the sweep, that's just a hats off to, you know, our pitching staff and our offense. You know, they did their job.
Luis Severino picked up the win. He's now 11-2, and he continues his march towards the Cy Young. His ERA is just 2.24. Yankees keep the Red Sox at bay as the lead still sits at 2. Entering the weekend, New York heads to Tampa Bay. CC Sabathia is on the mound, while Boston hosts Seattle. The Mets lost 6-4 in Colorado despite out-hitting the Rockies, who jumped on Steven Matz with 5 runs in the first 2 innings. Matz fell to 3-5. New York has lost 7 of 10. They'll host the Dodgers tonight as Zach Wheeler tries to turn it around. NBA draft took place on Thursday, and the Knicks, with the 9th pick, went down south to Kentucky to get a lanky small forward, Kevin Knox, who's ready to win now.
It don't really matter where I'm at. I mean, I'm going to go with the mindset that I'm going to compete every day and work hard so I can have a starting spot, but nothing's guaranteed, especially in the NBA. Fista is going to let me fight for the position, fight for the spot. I know I'm about to earn it, but I mean, like I said, I'm willing to work. Nothing's guaranteed. The goal is to start, and I'm going to compete for that starting spot.
The Nets took Jana Musa from Croatia with the 29th pick, and that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob.
Thank you, Rob Bushka. On Bloomberg Business of Sports tonight, pro sports teams have always measured things like height and weight. Now up, the brain. Scott Goldman, co-founder of Athletic Intelligence Measures, tells us about his company's attempt to evaluate an athlete's intelligence as it pertains to predicting his or her performance on the field. Hear that interview tonight at 8, tomorrow at 11 a.m. on Bloomberg Radio, or download our Apple podcast on iTunes. S&P futures down 13 points. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, developers of prime New York, Hoboken, Philadelphia, and Delray Beach real estate. Up to 20% return properties. See them at NRIA.net.
Global News 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are rising along with U.S. stock index futures as manufacturing and services data from the Eurozone's largest economies beat analysts' estimates, also lifting the region's common currency. Oil is jumping after OPEC and its allies reached a preliminary agreement on output. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 13 points, Dow futures up 115, NASDAQ futures up 27. The DAX in Germany is up 0.33%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 2.91%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.2%, up 79 cents to $66.32 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.20 to $12.71.70 an ounce. The euro, $1.1669, and the yen, 110.14. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. House Republicans canceled today's planned vote on immigration legislation. It comes after President Donald Trump signed an executive order to stop splitting up families illegally crossing the border. Meanwhile, a senior Trump administration official says about 500 of the more than 2,000 children separated from their families at the border have been reunited since May. Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and TV commentator Charles Krauthammer has died after a battle with cancer. Krauthammer was 68. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost, the Nationals beat the Orioles, the Red Sox and Giants were winners. In the World Cup, Denmark and Australia ended in a draw. France and Croatia were winners. In the NBA draft, DeAndre Ayton went number one to Phoenix. Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Michael, thank you very much. It is now 5:19 on Wall Street, and OPEC is meeting in Vienna in a final effort to overcome Iranian opposition to a preliminary agreement to boost production by a theoretical 1 million barrels a day, although the actual increase would be smaller as several countries are unable to raise output. We're getting some headlines out of that meeting as it gets underway. The Saudi oil minister quoted as saying, "We listen to Iran, but the majority wants an increase in production." And now from Iran's oil minister, a double negative on the outlook for an OPEC agreement in Vienna. He says, "I'm not pessimistic about a compromise." We are joined now by Stephen Schork, president of the Schork Group. Stephen, good morning. And now I see a little bit more forceful comment from Iran's oil minister. He says, "I see there is a likelihood in reaching agreement." What do you think?
I think he has no choice at this point, Bob. The writing's clearly on the wall. For no other reason than the 7.5% rise in the dollar that we've seen off of post-OPEC quota lows back in February. Keep in mind that oil is still a globally traded commodity that is denominated in dollars. So a rising dollar is certainly conducive for producers to put more oil onto the market. To that point, you also have record or near-record demand for crude oil at this time. So it certainly would behoove the producers that can, that is to say Saudi Arabia and Russia, to put more barrels onto the market to make up for the barrels that are not coming from the market, coming from Venezuela because of the strife there. There is disruptions of civil strife in Libya. And, of course, with the reinstatement of sanctions on Iran, hence why they're taking such a hawkish view on production cuts, because they don't want to cede market share that they are fighting at. But those are lost barrels to the market that have to be made up as we head into the summer.
Now, you say that you don't think he has much choice here, but Iran could wield a veto over any formal agreement, yes?
They could, absolutely, but all the Saudis will need to do is, when they meet on Saturday with the Russians, is to form an outside group to bypass the veto, because these decisions are based on a unanimous vote. So it's likely that Iran will cast a no vote, of course, again, with Venezuela. But these two countries are casting votes because they simply, even if they could, wanted to put oil onto the market, they cannot. So the producers that can, namely Saudi Arabia and, of course, Russia, which is not part of the group but working in concert with OPEC, could simply form an agreement outside of the producer group and agree to put oil onto the market. And that's exactly what I suspect will occur over the weekend.
Another headline out of Vienna at this hour, the Iranian oil minister says he and others are trying to change the structure of the JMMC. That would be the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee. What would that accomplish as Iran tries to hold the line on production?
Again, I think Iran, over the past 2 years, with the initial lifting of sanctions from the United States, and it's reestablishment into the global order, has achieved a level of respect at the table, as it were, that it had never previously enjoyed. So I think with the potential of the sanctions taking hit is Iran's attempt to maintain the market share within the group, as it were, to keep its status quo.
Now, if they do raise supply by a nominal 1 million barrels per day, what effect would that have on prices?
Well, I think what we've seen now is we had a significant tail off in prices. If we look at the differential between the Brent market, which is more of the global market, which is going to be the market that is most vulnerable to OPEC decisions, and WTI, that spread has come off almost $4 or $5 now. It had blown out earlier this month, to an $11.40 premium. That is, the price of global oil over the price of oil in the United States, the two benchmarks, was a significant blowout. That differential now is back below $8. So that upwards of $5 of differential coming in right now is telling you kind of the geopolitical risk premium that was priced in. So now that we're looking at oil, the NYMEX oil is trading in the mid-$60 range, meaning that Brent oil, the global market, trading in the low $70 range. I think that is more of a level that is palatable to both the producer, because the producer can make money at this level, and more importantly, to the consumer, where you're not going to cannibalize market share. Bob, there's an old adage on Wall Street: you can give your customer frequent haircuts, you can only scalp them once.
Okay.
And by keeping oil in that $65 to $70 range, that's the haircut range, Bob.
Stephen Short, president of the Short Group, thanks very much for your insights this morning. And let's check oil right now. NYMEX crude up 1.25% at this hour to $66.36 a barrel. Brent crude is up 1.4% to $74.08. S&P futures this morning up 13 points. That is 0.5%. The 10-year yield at 2.9169%. Daybreak brought to you by the 2018 Range Rover Velar. It brings together elegance and innovation like you've never seen before. Visit your local tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special offers. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and stocks in Europe are higher as we close out the trading week. The Dow has dropped for 8 straight days entering today's session.
Stocks in China rose 0.5% today. Sources tell Bloomberg some White House officials are trying to restart talks with China before tariffs on Chinese products take effect next month.
The euro is strengthening after Greece's creditors struck a landmark deal to ease repayment terms on some of the nation's loans.
Oil is trading above $66 a barrel as ministers in Vienna agreed on a theoretical increase in production of 1 million barrels a day, despite calls from Iran to boost output further.
Economic momentum in the euro area unexpectedly picked up in June. A composite purchasing managers index climbed to 54.8 in June.
Here in the U.S., we get that Purchasing Managers Index reading at 9:45 a.m. Wall Street time. Economists forecast little change from last month's 56.4 reading. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice reports.
U.S. manufacturing, by and large, has benefited from renewed spending on plant and equipment. In May, the Market Factory Index retreated from a three-year high, registering 56.4. There is a wild card in the mix, the impact of tariffs on domestic production. Manufacturing accounts for about 10% of U.S. economic activity. Vinny Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinny. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are urging against getting spooked by their stress test scores. The Federal Reserve said the two banks had the two lowest capital levels by one key measure in the latest results. But the banks say not to worry. That may not affect dividends and stock buybacks.
Deutsche Bank had the outlook for its credit rating lowered to negative from stable by Fitch Ratings. Fitch cites risks tied to Deutsche Bank's turnaround plan.
And Airbus is threatening to pull its UK investments if Britain walks away from the European Union without a deal. The company says a departure from the single market without a transition agreement would lead to severe disruption of production.
Futures are higher. S&P futures up 14 points. Dow futures up 117. Nasdaq futures up 31. The DAX in Germany's up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32nds. Yield 2.91%. Yield on the 2-year 2.54%. Again, NYMEX crude oil up 1.33%, up 89 cents, to $66.42 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.10 to $12.71.60 an ounce. The euro is at $1.1666, the British pound $1.3305, and the yen 110.13. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. the internal struggle, immigration struggle within the GOP. Bloomberg's Michael Barr has the latest. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Republican House leaders have delayed a vote on immigration amid a party fight. The bills come amid a furor over splitting up families at the U.S.-Mexico border. GOP Congressman Jeff Denham says they will delay the vote until next week. Meanwhile, President Trump slammed Democrats for, as he says, obstructing a fix to the immigration system. He also took a swipe at Mexico.
They encourage people, frankly, to walk through Mexico and go into the United States because they're drug traffickers, they're human traffickers, they're coyotes. I mean, we're getting some real beauties.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is demanding the Trump administration provide information on the estimated 700 immigrant children sent to foster care agencies in the state after being separated from their parents. Cuomo is slamming President Trump's new executive order that halts the practice.
He didn't reverse himself. The executive order is a sham. A reversal is a 180. This was a 360. This was a political pirouette. He wound up just where he started.
First Lady Melania Trump made an unannounced visit to a facility housing children near the southern border in McAllen, Texas. A new restriction for President Trump's former campaign chairman as he awaits trial in special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Bloomberg's Nathan Hager reports from Washington.
A federal judge in Washington has ordered Paul Manafort to be kept away from other prisoners while he's in jail on suspicion of trying to tamper with witnesses. Manafort's bail was revoked last week. He was sent to Northern Neck Regional Jail in Virginia ahead of his trial in September in Washington on charges of money laundering, obstruction of justice, and failing to register as an agent of Ukraine. Judge Amy Berman Jackson didn't explain her reasons for separating Manafort, but did say he should be afforded reasonable opportunity to consult with his lawyer. In Washington, I'm Nathan Hager, Bloomberg Radio.
The Trump administration's Middle East negotiators, Jared Kushner and Jason Greenblatt, will be discussing ways to avert a humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip and create jobs in the West Bank while in the region this week. That's according to two Israeli officials. Charles Krauthammer, a Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post columnist, died yesterday at age 68 of cancer of the small intestine, according to his son. Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Michael, thank you very much. Now 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And good morning to you, Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Bob. The Yankees flexed their power early, scoring all four runs in the first inning, making it hold up behind Luis Severino as New York down Seattle 4-3. Skipper Aaron Boone taking pride in the win.
Capped off what turned into a really, really good homestand. Made a big first inning stand up there. You know, they made Sevy work really hard, and, you know, we were able to kind of put a cool comeback on them last night to salvage one, but that's a good team we beat. I mean, it's clear, you can see it, and just happy to finish off a good homestand and get on that plane on a good note.
It was the 50th win for the Yankees, still two games ahead of Boston, who won in Minnesota. Severino's now 11-2. New York heads to Tampa Bay, where they'll hand it over to CC Sabathia, while the Mariners visit Fenway Park to meet the Red Sox. The Mets have dropped 7 of their last 10. They were outlasted in Colorado 6-4, despite out-hitting the Rockies. Rough outing for Steven Matz, who allowed 5 runs in the first 2 innings en route to the loss. He's 3-5. New York hosts the Dodgers, Zach Wheeler on the mound. NBA draft, meet the newest Nick, Kevin Knox, small forward from Kentucky at 6'9", 215. He's full of confidence.
My versatility, I think I can pretty much play all around the floor. I can handle the ball in pick and roll situations, make plays, make passes. I can stretch the floor, shoot the ball, get rebounds, and be able to push it coast to coast. So I think that versatility in the league is something that a lot of teams really need. I think that's something I can bring to the Knicks right now.
Knox was selected 9th overall. They also added center Mitchell Robinson in the second round, who played overseas last year, while the Nets took Croatia's Jana Musa at 29. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Rob Bushka, thank you. The TV networks showing the World Cup in the U.S. are paying the price for the American team's absence. So far, viewership on Fox and Telemundo has fallen 44% compared with 4 years ago when the U.S. team played. Fox had already lowered the audience it guaranteed advertisers. Now 5:37 on Wall Street. And the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with our cover story, how reports of Nintendo's death have been greatly exaggerated. Felix Gillette wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
That's a wild business. I mean, it's this incredible boom and bust cycles that they go through. I mean, I kind of think of it like the American movie business with blockbuster business, only even more exaggerated.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now to access insights and analysis on the global stories that matter most. Now 5:38 on Wall Street, and that's time for your Tri-State Business Report and our Friday check-in with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning.
Hi, Bob. Sources tell Bloomberg the Trump Organization and the Kushner Companies have ended their partnership at a New Jersey hotel. Kushner owns a string of properties in the Mid-Atlantic region, including the Westminster Hotel in Livingston, which the Trump Organization had been managing. Well, the number of homes listed for sale in Manhattan jumped 17% last month from a year earlier. That's the biggest annual increase in data going back to 2010, according to Street Easy. The biggest rise was on the Upper East Side. Inventory usually peaks in May, but this year the increase was coupled with a 38% decline in sales. Well, the Meadowlands Racetrack plans to bring legal sports betting to New York City's doorstep next month. The manager tells the Associated Press he plans to begin offering sports betting July 15th. That's a lot earlier than a timetable the track laid out just over a week ago. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Bob?
Ed, thanks very much. It is now 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Conagra is said to have approached Pinnacle Foods about a potential deal that would add popular freezer aisle brands to its roster.
I'm Steve Podesk, and on WJFK, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C., I'm reporting on quarterly results from Richmond-based CarMax.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following a warning from Airbus. It might pull out of the U.K. if there's no Brexit deal with the EU.
I'm Jeanette Cervetti, and for Wham 1180 in Rochester, New York. I'm reporting that a New York State appeals court says Postmates couriers are not employees, a decision that will fuel debate about the status of workers in the gig economy.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Toyota Research Institute has resumed self-driving car tests that were suspended in March after an Uber in self-driving mode hit and killed a woman in Arizona.
Thank you all. Those are just some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. S&P futures up 13 points, half a percent. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by Land Rover Edison for road-taming confidence. Nothing compares to driving a 2018 Range Rover Velar. See for yourself with special limited-time offers from Land Rover Edison, a Ray Katina dealership.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks rising along with U.S. stock index futures as manufacturing and services data from the Eurozone's largest economies beat analyst estimates, also lifting the region's common currency. Oil, meanwhile, jumping after OPEC and its allies reach a preliminary agreement on output. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 13 points, Dow futures up 111, NASDAQ futures up 30. The DAX in Germany is up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury down 6/32nds, yield 2.91%, yield on the 2-year 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.5% or 98 cents to $66.52 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.10 to $12.71.70 an ounce. The euro at $1.1664 and the yen 110.16. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a senior Trump administration official said that about 500 children separated from their families at the U.S.-Mexico border have been reunited since May. It comes as House Republicans canceled today's planned vote on immigration legislation as leaders sought to quell an intra-party fight. The U.S. Supreme Court has paved the way for states to collect sales tax on online purchases. The decision overturns an old ruling that states cannot tax retailers who do not have a physical store in their state. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost, the Nationals beat the Orioles, the Red Sox and Giants were winners. In the World Cup, Denmark and Australia ended in a draw. France and Croatia were winners. NBA draft, DeAndre Ayton went number one overall to Phoenix. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. It is now 5:49 on Wall Street. And let's wrap up the trading week now with David Kotok, CEO of Cumberland Advisors. And it has been, shall we say, David, a very interesting week. I don't want to be the killjoy here, so I will note that markets in China closed higher today. European stocks are rallying, and U.S. stock index futures are on the rise right now. But, David, let me just repeat something we mentioned a little earlier. The Dow has dropped for 8 straight days entering today's session. Does that suggest that just under the surface of the market's shiny veneer are some real problems?
Well, Bob, good morning. I would say the answer is yes. I'm calling you from a fishing lodge in Maine, Lean's Lodge, where we have our first group. We've been talking about it for a couple of days here. Of course, the underlying theme is this trade war rhetoric and maybe actual trade war. And markets are reacting to a rising risk that this is going to become real. Now, whether it will be real or there will be some negotiation remains to be seen. But up here in our conversations, we've been dissecting the impact of the trade policy of the United States, and it is not good. If it is only rhetoric, and then there are settlements and business goes on, that's one thing. If obstacles, protectionism, tariffs, barriers make things more difficult in trade, inflation goes up, production goes down, economies slow, and that's a worldwide effect. So yes, risk is rising, markets are reacting to it.
And I might say not only that, but it appears that there is a split even within the White House about how to handle this. Sources telling Bloomberg that some White House officials are trying to get these talks restarted with China to avoid this trade war before the tariffs take effect July 6th.
Well, I think that's true, and it appears to me and to some of the folks up here, we have a chaotic White House without maturity. We need more adults in the room. And we have to stop calling each other names and bluster and have belligerency and have a negotiation that's a real one. Whether it's the G7 and Canada, China, whatever the issue is, you can't attack the other guy, especially if it's your ally and you need him. And now we have these cross currents with China because of Korea. It's a very complicated and bewildering array of rhetoric coming from our government. If you were on the other side in another country and you were trying to structure commercial relationships, you wouldn't be sure of what to do, and you wouldn't know that the next day whatever is said is going to be reversed. How do you negotiate in such a circumstance?
So, speaking of not knowing what to do, if you're an investor, what's an investor to do, how best to position yourself for this?
Well, what an investor should do is up to the investor. I'll tell you what we have done. We are overweight small caps. We are overweight mid caps. We are overweight domestic business. For example, community banks, which are getting regulatory relief. There's an ETF. We had several positions. We bought a little yesterday in the weakness. And there are ways you can capture the sectors which are insulated or at least buffered from this international unknown rising uncertainty. On the other hand, a little cash reserve is probably a good thing right now, and we have that in our ETF accounts. And the bond accounts, the cheap sector, is the tax-free municipal bond market. It remains priced above the Treasury curve because the retail investor in tax-free municipal bond mutual funds is afraid of rising interest rates, doesn't buy the bonds, doesn't buy the funds, and therefore the interest rate is not arbitraged in accordance with the tax code.
Just a couple of seconds left here. Stay away from Treasuries.
I would worry here about the Treasury curve. A Treasury curve being where it is distorted if the Fed's going to keep raising short-term rates, which they have committed to do.
Okay.
What are they going to do? Drive a curve to flat, or is it going to invert? I don't think so, which would say that we probably have a headwind ahead of us in the treasuries as we go out in the maturity spectrum.
David Kotak, CEO of Cumberland Advisors, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
It's 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Virginia Senator Mark Warner has introduced legislation that would direct Treasury to study tax issues for gig economy workers. The Democrat wants to address issues including withholding and filing. Early Obamacare premium filings for 2019 appear to be about 15% higher than 2018, but it appears there will be increased competition and plan choices in many exchanges. And a White House reorganization plan to add thousands of Superfund cleanup sites, consolidate Energy Department offices, and split authority over the Army Corps of Engineers stands little chance in Congress.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal news. Let's take a look at the Supreme Court's decision to allow state and local governments to start collecting billions of dollars in sales taxes from internet retailers that don't currently charge tax to their customers. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks with Bloomberg News Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr.
It wasn't a typical lineup of justices joining Justice Kennedy in the majority where Justices Clarence Thomas, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch. So to what do you attribute this?
The underlying legal doctrine, which is known as the Dormant Commerce Clause, which sounds like something that should put you to sleep, but it's basically the idea that states can't interfere with interstate commerce, at least unless Congress lets them explicitly says they can. That underlying doctrine, for whatever reason, just cuts across ideological lines. It has never divided the courts the way so many other issues do. And in this case, it was very clear at the arguments that Justice Ginsburg was poised to overturn this physical presence requirement. She didn't see any reason why a state should not be allowed to impose tax collection responsibilities, and she joined with people like Justice Thomas, who thinks that the whole dormant commerce clause idea actually isn't in the Constitution, so he was more excited about overturning the Quill decision.
What did the dissent say, and who wrote that?
Well, the dissent, you know, wasn't so much, it was written by the Chief Justice, John Roberts, and it wasn't so much that he was saying the physical presence requirement was a good one, but basically that this is going to have a lot of implications, implications we can't fully understand, and Congress is the one who should deal with this. So this entire area of law is one where, you know, both before this ruling and after this ruling, Congress can come in and set the rules for the states in terms of what they can do. And Chief Justice Roberts essentially said it would be much better if we let Congress overturn the physical presence rule and therefore be able to set whatever, you know, sort of minimum requirements it would want for states to avoid imposing too much of a burden on small businesses.
That's Bloomberg News Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr speaking with Bloomberg's Joan Grosso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures up 12 points, Dow futures up 103, NASDAQ futures up 25, the 10-year Treasury down 4/32, the yield 2.91%, and they continue to watch NYMEX crude oil up 1.4% right now, Brent up 1.7%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg Radio.